City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We are talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 349. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Mitchell Fain.
Hello, Mitchell.
Hi, I'm back.
You're back. You were in Nueva's York.
Yes, I was in New York and Rhode Island and New Jersey for 11 days.
Did you see the New Jersey Shore?
I didn't see the New Jersey Shore, but I went to Rhode Island, which is all shore, and I went to, for listeners, if you ever go to the East Coast and think that Provincetown,
P-Town
is the only destination, you're wrong. We need to keep this little secret.
Okay. Just between us podcasters.
Exactly. Rhode Island, I grew up there, so I'm biased, but it's so beautiful. Even in the fucking winter, it was so beautiful. And Block Island is this tiny island, much like Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket, but tinier, about an hour's ferry ride from the coast of Rhode Island. And my friend Sheila is taking a month off to finish a play. So she's living on this isolated, wintry island in the off the coast of Rhode Island. And so we went out to spend the day and had the most magical, it's the most beautiful place. And in the summer, it's off the charts beautiful, but even in the winter.
All right, let's make a pact to go there in the summer and do a show.
Block Island, you just won't believe how beautiful, it is. It's so bucolic, New England island. It's just lovely.
Did you eat lots of fish?
We ate fish and we drank Bloody Marys and we sat on the porch and smoked cigarettes. I know, dysfunctional, but delicious. We laughed our asses off, so much so that we had to like run for the last ferry so we didn't miss it, like, because we were having so much fun. It was like, oh shit, we got 3 minutes to get to the ferry, but luckily nothing is more than 3 minutes away.
In
Block Island. Anyway, so that was delightful. I went to New York, stayed there for a long time, stayed in the West Village with a very good friend of mine. Just love the village so much.
What do you do when you go to New York? I mean, I know you have lots of friends there, so
I
you
do.
See people. But do you have favorites? Do you have favorite places you like to go?
Well, I love to hang out in the village. There's like coffee shops and cafes, and it's a little wine bar that I love to go to. I love to go to, you know, I love to see shows. I didn't end up seeing a big Broadway musical, which I usually do, but I saw this incredibly funny show that gets done once a month. Maybe people have heard of it. It's called Celebrity Autobiography. Have you heard of this?
Mm-mm.
They get really funny celebs to read verbatim other celebrities' autobiographies live on stage.
Okay.
It was such a scene and so funny. My friend Rachel Dratch was in it, so she got us tickets. I went with another friend. And Rachel, Ryan Reynolds, hottie Ryan Reynolds, who, by the way, is even better looking in person.
Wow.
Just so everybody knows, he reeks sex appeal in person.
Wow.
And so sweet and kind. Anyway, Rosie Perez,
aww,
Kristen Johnston. Rosie Perez, she read from, oh my God, brilliantly read from Suzanne Summers' first book of poetry. But they don't add, they don't edit.
Yeah.
They don't add an editorial comment about it. They simply read it.
Yeah.
Who else?
What did Ryan Reynolds read?
First, he read from Tommy Lee's autobiography, which was hilarious. Every time he said the word dick, you could feel the entire audience, gay, straight, male, female, just go, oh God.
Oh God.
Please stop.
I've been penetrated.
Yes, please stop saying dick because I may have to leave for a moment. So sexy.
And what did Rachel read?
Rachel first read from Joan London's autobiography. Uh-huh. So
she's goddamn mean.
It was just so, but it was just so banal, so funny. Rachel's so fucking, I'm in a bias, but she's so fucking funny. And she read Joan London's autobiography about getting ready at 4 a.m. and kept saying 4 a.m. as if like we don't understand what that means because I don't know, because we're idiots or something.
Mm-hmm.
It was genius. And then there was a section where they had people reading different people's biographies that autobiographies that cross. So like Kristen Johnston read Lonnie Anderson's, Ryan Reynolds read Burt Reynolds.
Mm-hmm.
He did a spot on Burt Reynolds, by the way. Mm-hmm. Spot on. And then Dratch read Burt Reynolds' assistant of like 30 years wrote an autobiography. So they read them at the same time. So it becomes a dialogue.
Oh,
but they're reading about the same incident.
Who puts this thing together? Because obviously somebody has to pick the autobiography and what part you're reading.
There's some dude,
in.
I can't remember his name. He runs it. It's at the Triad Theater in New York City. I recommend it highly. It's a hot ticket. It was packed. When I tell you packed, 2 shows, beyond sold out, standing room only. Such a scene, so fun. Loved it. Ended up sitting with some of Dratchy's other friends who I'd never met, these really cute gay boys. One of whom I chatted with, couldn't be more charming, but one of them who I sort of flirted wildly with, and then we hung out again in New York, but that's a different story. Anyway, this one guy, so charming, so funny, and I mentioned that he would be great at Hedwig, you know, like, well, I said, have you ever played Hedwig? And he was so charmed. He was like, I have, good eye, yeah, I have played Hedwig. And then, and his friends were like, yeah, he has, and then I didn't think anything of it. And then later when we all had wine after the show, Dratch mentioned something, and I realized that not only had he played Hedwig, but he was the first replacement for John Cameron Mitchell in New York, and that I saw him play Hedwig.
Oh, wow!
I mean, here I am talking to this brilliant, like, Broadway veteran,
yeah.
And I'm like, you know what you should do?
You know what you
do you have
do
your
dear?
Equity card? Maybe you'd be lovely at that. I mean, what an asshole. He couldn't have been more charming and less, like, stainy about it. Like, he so didn't make me feel bad. Anyway, so that was just, it was the most amazing trip. I just, like, every day seemed more fun than the last. I mean, then on Saturday, my friend Rachel that I was staying with through this, she called it the We Love Mitchell East Coast dinner party.
Mm-hmm.
And so people came in from Connecticut and from Rhode Island and from Jersey and just this magic. My friend Jordan flew in from Chicago.
Aww.
Just for the dinner party.
Aww.
To surprise. Amazing. And then in Rhode Island, this is a very dumb story, but it's the power of Facebook, right?
The F word.
Yeah, about 6 or 8 months ago, I get friended by somebody with my cousin's last name.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like 23 years old, so I say yes. Turns out he's my cousin's son, who I haven't seen since he was like 3.
Wow.
His name's Jeremy. And he's like, you know, we're cousins, and I wanted to say hi. And he said, people keep telling me that I look like my dad, but I remind them of you. You know, people in our mutual family. And, you know, his parents never got together, so it was sort of this split from my family because he was raised by his mother. But he stayed close with his grandmother, who's my aunt, so my great aunt. So we're like, Jeremy and I are like second cousins once removed, or third cousins, whatever that is. Anyway, we just became Facebook friends, just chatting a couple of times a week, just saying hi. Then I sort of saw something on his Facebook page about gay marriage, and I said, I just want to commend you for being on the right side of history. And he's like, well, I'm gay. And I was like, you are? And he's like, yeah. I said, do you know that my whole family's gay? Meaning my brother and sister. And he was like, no, I knew you were, but I didn't know they were. And so we just become Facebook friends. So the Saturday night that I was in Rhode Island, I invited him to join a bunch of my friends for dinner in Providence. Uh-huh. If you've ever eaten dinner in Providence, you know what I'm talking about. The best food in the world.
Yeah.
Because the combination of fresh seafood and old school, old world Italians put two and two together.
Pretty brilliant.
Amazing food.
You're hurt the next day.
Amazing food in Providence. It's just everywhere you go. Anyway. So he literally walks into the bar of this restaurant that we're going to get a table at. And I say, you know, Meg and Louise and Mary, this is my cousin Jeremy, who I'm meeting right now for the very first time in front of you. And they just had the most charming, delightful time. It was like magic. But it would not have happened without Facebook.
All right. I understand the hard sell of the Facebook. This was like the commercial
yes.
ad, right?
That well, it's just like people Facebook. Who sort of diss on Facebook. Because I also had the opposite experience with Facebook recently where it's a social networking site, people.
Yep.
So if your friends have a conversation on your thread, don't get shitty about it because it's a social networking site. I have a friend who literally removed himself from Facebook because people start to talk to his sister on Facebook.
Yep.
And he just took himself off of Facebook. I'm like, dude, it's a fucking social networking site. That's what it's for.
This is what I'm saying. I don't know. It's either the end of time or the beginning of time.
I don't know what people freak out about. Don't put anything embarrassing on Facebook.
Yeah, but now people can post shit about you and you can't remove it. Anybody can post anything. Anybody can post any picture or anything. Not that I have embarrassing pictures. Right. I don't.
Well, that's another part
of it. I've burned all of them.
That's what I'm saying. Don't take an embarrassing picture.
Right.
Don't do something embarrassing. There's nothing to talk about.
But you don't know that but even if somebody just got a really bad picture of you.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they just got a bad, awkward picture of you. Not that you're like...
You can untag
it. You're copulating or having oral sex, but right. Like, you know, they just get a bad picture of you. There's no way to remove it.
I'm not sure if there is a picture of me where I'm not copulating or having oral sex.
I was about to say. Or that you don't look good.
That's XTube. That's not Facebook.
Yeah.
That's a whole different story.
Hey, everybody. I am really excited about today's show, and because a couple of years ago, I invited Mitchell to be my date, which I often do.
Yeah, we are theater dates.
We are theater dates because my girl is often away. And Mitchell and I went down to the Harris Theater.
Gorgeous.
I had interviewed the artistic director of the Troques, the Les Ballets du Trocadéro de Monte Carlo, which is an all-male ballet troupe. Comedic ballet troupe. And I asked Mitchell if he wanted to go. Now, we knew not at all what we were going
Nothing.
To see.
And I had never been to the Harris, too, so it was a real joy.
And you've never been to the Harris, which is a fantastic world-class
unreal.
Facility.
It's unreal.
The brilliant patronage of the Harris, Joan Harris and her husband. So we went down. We had great seats.
Amazing.
And let me just say, the lights went down. The curtain came up. I started laughing.
We laughed.
And I hurt.
We laughed the entire time. And here's the deal. It's literally what Amy described. It is a all-male ballet company in which they do full-on ballets, but all of the parts
right.
are played by men. Now, and in drag.
Yes.
Some if they're female
Without
parts.
Without shaving chest hair sometimes.
Nope. It's not about being a drag queen or a drag performer. It is about
being a clown.
It is about... Well, that's the thing. It's so funny. But don't misunderstand that the dancing suffers.
Oh, no.
Because it does not. Because we saw them do part of Swan Lake, in which not only was it fucking funny, because the guy playing the swan
right.
is literally a 220-pound muscular dancer. I mean,
yep.
like, you know, so
yep.
A, there's some sexy boys with muscles
yep.
wearing very little. And the man was on goddamn point.
Yep.
It's one thing to be 90 pounds, 87-pound ballet dancer and be on point. It's nothing to be a 220-pound muscle guy
yep.
on fucking point.
Yeah.
And do not let the fact that it's a comedic troupe confuse you that they are not dancing.
They are dancing their ass. They're great
Which makes it funny.
Dancers.
They're amazing dancers. That's what makes it funny. It's like parody or homage only works if you actually have the skills to do the thing you're parodying.
Right.
If you don't have the skills, then it's just you being a jackass, I think. That's my sort of opinion about it. So not only can they...
It's truly homage.
Homage because not only can they parody it or do an homage to it or send up of it, but they can actually do it.
Right. Well, and it's the juxtaposition of them playing it straight and the little moments where they comment.
Right. With
and that's what's so brilliant.
Or when some dude who's like 170 pounds goes to lift the 220-pound ballerina.
Yeah. Or goes to run and leap and stops right before, like,
I mean,
on certain little moments.
It's so cleverly done and so beautifully executed. I mean, it sounds like we're doing a commercial for them.
But you learn some of the great ballets, too, don't know.
And
they
if
did
you're
Paquita
not a
right. when we saw it.
Right, and if you're not, like, if you don't think of yourself as a person who loves dance.
You don't have to.
You so don't have to. If you just love to laugh, treat yourself. They are a preciously original commodity in a world of saran wrapped entertainment.
Yeah. And they have beautiful quote. They should use that on their brochure. And they have performed around the world. The places they have performed, it's pretty stunning, and they don't get to Chicago very often, and they only play one night when they're here. So what we're gonna do in this show, I've got some news, I've got some entertainment. We're gonna take you to our bisexual piece. We have not had a little by the way in a while. So we're gonna Sin and Jack are gonna do a by the way segment, and then I've got Tori on, the artistic director of the Troques, here again, so that you can learn a little more about them, because they are coming to Chicago very, very soon. So stay tuned. Mitchell and I are with you the whole show.
Hi there. I'm a Miller Lite brewmaster.
And I'm a Miller Lite drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
You know, most people know that Miller Lite tastes great, but up until now, only brewmasters like me knew why.
Well, most people know that my friends and I are the most dominating presence in the Kalamazoo Western Division Level 3 Softball League. but very few know why.
Huh. You see, we add the hops first for flavor, second for balance, and a third time to lock in the great Pilsner taste by enhancing the foamy head.
Yeah, well, we don't need fancy softball strategery to win.
We call it the triple hops brewing process.
Well, we call it heart, Mr. Man.
We're on the same team here. I thought you would appreciate this new information.
I apologize. I just wish I had something as important to share.
Well, buy a six-pack of Miller Lite, and you will.
Miller Lite brewmasters have to know the ins and outs of triple hops brewing. The only thing you have to do is enjoy the great-tasting light beer. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News. In Chicago, Daniel Hauff, a gay man, was attacked by three men on a Red Line L train after he tried to intervene in an argument. The alleged perpetrators started beating Hauff and yelling anti-gay slurs at him. Hauff managed to get away by smearing blood on the alleged attackers, saying he is HIV positive, which he is not. The responding officers planned to charge the suspects who were arrested with committing a hate crime.
A scion of the Rockefeller family has launched a GLBT scholarship. Rick Rockefeller Sylvia, age 25, has started the Rockefeller Sylvia Dream Endowed Scholarship, which will allow college students in Philadelphia to study in Europe for a semester. Rockefeller Sylvia said that he came out to his mother, the great-great-granddaughter of billionaire John D. Rockefeller, when he was an adolescent.
In New York, a judge ruled that the state's thruway authority has to pay a trans woman, Mackenzie Valentine, more than $55,000 because she worked in a hostile work environment. Co-workers had called Valentine a freak and a drag queen and viewed computerized information about her when they discovered her former identity. Valentine underwent gender reassignment surgery in 2006.
In San Diego, several pro-GLBT groups, including Equality California and the Courage Campaign, held a demonstration against the Manchester Grand Hyatt Hotel. The Manchester Grand Hyatt, owned by Doug Manchester, has been targeted by gay rights activists ever since it was revealed that he contributed $125,000 to support California's anti-same-sex marriage initiative, Prop 8.
Also in San Diego, authorities are looking for a thief who seems to be going after gay men at Urban Moe's, a bar in the Hillcrest area. The suspect, who called himself John or Paul, picked up at least two men in December at that night spot.
Jorge and Robert Morgan, a gay couple who say they are domestic partners, could face the death penalty if they are convicted of murdering Cynthia Ramos last summer. Ramos had been beaten, stabbed 55 times, and strangled in her mobile home. The Morgans are also charged with robbery, lying in wait, and burglary. The couple is seeking to be allowed to be incarcerated in the same cell, even though policy dictates they will be kept apart.
In Maine, marriage equality activist Bruce LaValle Davidson has been convicted of manslaughter after he killed Fred Wilson during a drug-fueled three-way sex party that lasted 12 hours. While it was not believed LaValle Davidson meant to kill anyone, using loaded guns during sex play was deemed negligent. He could be sentenced to up to 30 years in prison.
Naval authorities are being criticized for the way they handled harassment and hazing in a dog handling unit in Bayonne. An investigation revealed more than 90 incidents of harassment of junior sailors, including being force-fed dog treats in order to simulate oral sex during a training video. Openly gay Petty Officer Joseph Rocha said that he was forced to leave the military in 2007 because in reporting the hazing allegations, he admitted he was gay, violating the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy.
In world news, in England, the Albert Kennedy Trust is dealing with an increasing number of young gay Muslims who are homeless after leaving violence and forced marriages. A Pakistani named Sunni said that when he refused to marry a girl, he was kept in his family's home and often beaten because of the supposed shame he brought on his family.
The organization HIV Scotland could lose its funding after a review criticized the group. The review, commissioned by the government, said that HIV Scotland exercises poor communication with HIV-positive people and related agencies. Also, the study said that some groups, such as IV drug users and heterosexuals, were being neglected.
Muscular UK rugby star Gareth Thomas, who recently came out, said that he is hoping to find a boyfriend. In his first gay interview with Attitude magazine, he revealed that despite looking like a tough fucker, he had a lot of love to give. Thomas added, "The thought now is exciting. Sitting down to watch telly, to cuddle up to somebody, to be able to show affection to somebody is exciting."
And in entertainment news, Lady Gaga has been named a creative director and inventor of specialty products for Polaroid. The 23-year-old singer said, "We won't be selling cameras with my face on them. I'm working on bringing the instant camera back as part of the future." The new products from the House of Gaga will be available this year.
Lesbian comedian Wanda Sykes has suffered a broken foot. Sykes sustained the injury January 7th during a production. However, the weekly talk show still ran as scheduled.
Michael C. Hall, known as the serial killer Dexter on the TV series and gay funeral director David Fisher on 6 Feet Under, is being treated successfully for Hodgkin's lymphoma. His condition is treatable and curable.
Fiance Tila Tequila said she plans to seek custody of Casey Johnson's 3-year-old daughter, Ava. Johnson's mother, Sale, currently has custody of Ava. However, Tequila has claimed that Johnson did not want that particular arrangement.
Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt have contributed $1 million in response to the earthquake in Haiti to Doctors Without Borders, whose 3 hospitals in the city of Port-au-Prince were severely damaged. The quake, which had a magnitude of 7.0, hit Haiti on January 12th. As many as 100,000 people are feared dead.
The 21st Annual GLAAD Media Awards will honor Cynthia Nixon with the Vito Russo Award. Nominees this year include the movies A Single Man and Precious, based on a novel pushed by Sapphire, TV shows One Life to Live and Glee, and singers Adam Lambert and Lady Gaga.
Matthew Morrison, who portrays teacher Will Schuster on the hit TV show Glee, has signed a deal with Mercury Records. Morrison has been in Broadway musicals Hairspray, The Light in the Piazza, and South Pacific. His first album will be released this fall.
Actress Rue McClanahan of the Golden Girls is recovering from a stroke that happened after her heart bypass operation last November. McClanahan, who is 75, spent 2 weeks in a hospital's intensive care unit and is currently in a nursing home for rehabilitation. Her husband, Matthew Wilson, said that her movement and voice have been affected.
Glee co-star and lesbian actress Jane Lynch has called President Barack Obama a huge disappointment for not taking a stand regarding Prop 8, saying, "Shouldn't there be safeguards against the majority voting on the rights of a minority? If people voted on civil rights in the 60s, it would have never happened. It took somebody like U.S. President Lyndon Johnson going, 'F all of you, I'm going to do this.' Obama won't do it."
Rosie O'Donnell has weighed in on the Tonight Show brouhaha. O'Donnell told reporters, "Shame on Jay Leno. I have been a big fan of Conan O'Brien. If you're privileged enough to be asked to drive the bus, you should say thank you and drive it to the best of your ability. And when it's time for them to hire a new driver, you should say thank you for allowing me to drive this for as long as I did and pass the keys to the new guy." And that's the Week in News brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, I'm Sin.
And I'm Jack. And we're putting the B in the big A alphabet with a he said, she said conversation about today's question.
So, Jack, we got a question.
From
whom?
I'm
very excited. From some loyal listener named David, I believe.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, David. Thanks, David. So, what is your buy slant on Prop 8?
Ah, very interesting. I think it's racism revisited, basically. I don't think anyone has the right to hinder anyone else, you know, regardless of their sexual orientation. I mean, there are bi people who are married. They're queer, you know.
Right.
Are they going to nullify their marriage?
Well, and also can't trans people, once the trans people get a sex, once they change their gender legally, can't they marry too legally?
Actually, that's a good question. I asked someone I know who is trans what her point of view on this situation was, and some people in California do not check birth certificates because birth certificates cannot be altered after a person goes through a change. And so some transgender people are capable of getting married in California through loopholes.
So M or male and female trans people and male and female bi people can get married already, but the rest of our queer brothers and sisters can't.
Correct. So all these people throwing this money into supporting Prop 8, they think they're wiping out the whole LGBT community, but we're outsmarting them here, so it's pretty sweet.
Right, right.
So, Sin, I got to ask you. Let's say you meet somebody and you want to get married. How would Prop 8 be a hindrance to you if you want to marry a woman versus if you want to marry a man?
Well, obviously, I mean, if I want to marry a woman, I can't. And if I want to marry a man, I could. And, as a bi person that feels really fucked up, you know, that I could participate in the marriage structure in this country as long as the person I fall in love with is a dude versus, you know, it like,
exactly.
Disrespects the love I could have with a woman, the relationship I could have with a woman. And, you know, and I don't know if I believe in marriage to begin with. I definitely believe that we have the rights to get fucking married. But I don't know if I could do that. You know what I mean? Like, so I was lucky enough to fall in love with a dude versus a chick. I mean, not that it's unlucky to fall in love with a chick. Trust me, ladies, I'm open to it, okay? But you know, I mean, so then I get rights. I don't know. It's just, that's fucked up.
Exactly. I agree with you. I mean, like, the whole privilege outlook, you know, insurance and estates and, you know, tax matters.
Right.
It's like, it's a big downer. I mean, we got to turn this around and have everybody be allowed to represent their love in an equal manner in the land of equality, you know?
Right, right. Equal rights, fuckers.
Exactly. So in California, get your shit together and vote against Prop 8. You know, enough of this bullshit. You know, it's seriously, it's just racism revisited.
I agree. All right, so that's, by the way, this week. If you have a question, you can email us at podcast@windycitymediagroup.com. I'm Sin.
And I'm Jack.
And we're...
and we'll be back with more B here on the Windy City Queercast.
Thanks.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater. Music. Dance. Art. Performance. Provocative. Hilarious. Exciting. Weird. Innovative. Campy. Edgy. Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of January 18th, 2010, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. After a sellout show in 2007, Paula Poundstone returns to Center East at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie on Friday, February 5th. Paula's spontaneity has become the stuff of legend. Catch this comic genius in action. Tickets on sale now at northshorecenter.org.
Million Dollar Quartet is a hit, raves the Chicago Tribune. On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the new rock and roll musical Million Dollar Quartet. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com. Now extended through March 28th at the Apollo Theater.
Proving that men can indeed dance on point without falling on their faces, Les Ballets Trocadero de Monte Carlo are guaranteed to amuse and inspire everyone in the audience, from the most knowledgeable to the novice dance fans. The Trokes promise to delight Chicago audiences with an exciting new show with their playful, entertaining view of classic ballet in disguise. One night only, Wednesday, January 27th at the Harris Theater. For tickets, visit harristheaterchicago.org.
It's Harlem in the spring of 1943. Elizabeth and Quilly are sisters of a certain age, sharing their quiet lives together. But when they take in a handsome young boarder, their entire world changes abruptly. Don't miss The Old Settler, this poignant family portrait. Tickets are selling quickly. Order yours today by logging on to writerstheater.org.
The Brother-Sister Plays by outplaywright Terrell Allen McCraney is the theatrical event of the Chicago winter, says the Chicago Tribune. Three interconnected plays directed by Tina Landau, which the New York Times raves, you experience the excited wonder that comes from witnessing something rare, a new, authentically original vision. Visit steppenwolf.org for tickets to the Brother Sister Plays. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hey, this is Emily from the Indigo Girls, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Years ago, I saw one of the most hilariously talented, innovative, and artistic experiences I've ever had in the theater. It was Les Ballets Trocadero de Monte Carlo, and it was here in Chicago, and they are called the Trokes for short. It's an all-male classical ballet troupe, part comedy, part ballet, part drag, and let me tell you, big, big, big fun. Mitchell Fain and I, our faces hurt, our sides hurt from laughing. I was sitting on the end of my seat, and I don't believe I've ever clapped that hard in the theater ever. We sat down, Peter Maverick, my former host, and I, and talked with the artistic director of the Trokes 2 years ago, prior to seeing them. And Tori Dorbin, who is the artistic director of the Trocaderos, sat down and talked with us about what are the Trokes. So if you don't know, can't wait to play this interview for you again.
Hey,
Tori.
Me.
It's so exciting that you all grew up wanting to be ballerinas. I wanted to grow up being a ballerina, lesbian that I am, and it just didn't work. It didn't come to pass for me, and I'm so glad that it came to pass for all of you gents.
Yeah, no, we enjoy doing it for sure. It really came out of the Stonewall era of New York. There was, after Stonewall happened in the Lower East Side of Manhattan and East, in the Greenwich Village, there was a lot of drag and other gay-related theater going on in clubs and bars and off-Broadway theaters. Mm-hmm. And the Trox really came out of that movement. There was one man specifically who had formed this company called the Ridiculous Theatrical Company, and his name was Charles Ludlum.
Love him. Mm-hmm.
Do you know him?
Oh, very much. I mean, oh, you can't know your gay theater history and not know Charles.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. And he asked a man to be a drag ballerina in one of his productions. And that man went on to form the Trocadero. I was taking a class in New York City, and a friend of mine who was in the Troc said, oh, they're looking for dancers to go on a nine-week tour to South America. And I said, sure, why not? Sounds like fun. And I went, and it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
So wait a minute. 1980s South America, and you guys are all in drag as ballerinas. Were people completely open to it? Was there any animosity towards you, or was it just all in
1980, because it was really the in the middle of, or maybe the height of, the military dictatorships in South America.
Yeah.
We actually, I believe, were used as a way for the population to rebel in a way culturally against the government. And so the audiences were sensational. It was a tough time. I remember we were in Buenos Aires, and you know, the police would follow us on the street. These really, you know, incredibly good-looking men trying to get us involved in something that would be considered illegal in their country. Mm. And we were warned to just ignore them because they could cause all sorts of problems. But here we were performing at really great theaters, including, you know, some of the opera houses, and playing to sold-out audiences. The audiences would, you know, send flowers on the stage, you know, throw the flowers on the stage at the conclusion and cheering. It was really an incredible experience.
So let me ask, being somebody who, you know, loves seeing ballet but has never seen the Trox, like, what am I going to see? Are you doing reinterpretations of Giselle, reinterpretations of Swan Lake, or is it original material? Is it classical entirely in form, and are you dancing on point? I mean, what is actually the repertoire for the company?
Well, what we've been doing for, you know, 34 years, is that we take classical ballets for the most part, and we stage them exactly as they are done anywhere else in any other ballet company. And the company is made up of basically stand-up comedian-type dancers. And so what we do is that we shape the program so that we turn it into a comedy ballet company, but also one that has different kinds of comedy, so it's not just all slapstick all evening long. So, for instance, in Chicago, we are going to do Swan Lake Act Two, which is basically the staging that they do at the Royal Ballet in London. Mm-hmm. However, for us, we've turned it into kind of a campy, it's very campy, you know, very fun, very, the core is more like a fractious batch of birds, you know, causing trouble. The Swan Queen is, you know, just unbelievably impatient with the kind of dull prince, and it's very, very funny. As the evening goes on, we present a lot of different other kinds of parody and satire. By the end of the evening, we'll be doing a big Russian ballet called Paquita. Mm. This was staged for us by a woman from St. Petersburg, and we staged it. She staged it just how she danced it in St. Petersburg. But, of course, we change it around. We add characterization. We add a lot of exaggeration of style, and we add some jokes. So anyone can really enjoy it for theater, for comedy, or for dance.
What is that physically? It seems incredibly demanding for all the dancers. What is that like?
And are you dancing on your toes? I have to know that.
Yeah, the guys are dancing all on their toes, which is something that a female normally does, a female ballerina. But you know, who said that a male couldn't do it?
I agree. And probably they're better because they have stronger damn ankles than most women.
Nice
calves.
That's what I'm thinking.
I actually like to compare it to tennis. So then we have someone named Steffi Graf and Andre Agassi playing great tennis, right? But they both learn the same exact technique for tennis. They learn drop shots and serves and slices and, you know, everything that they do, they learn in the same way. The only difference possibly is that Andre Agassi hits the ball a lot harder, and probably Steffi Graf looks a little bit more graceful and has more finesse. And that's exactly the same thing. So when a girl is learning point work, she is learning to developing a lot of finesse, where we're going more for the male attack. And we hit the ballet technique as males, but on point in those tutus and wigs and eyelashes. And that really is, so the audience is really looking at something that's, you know, familiar to what they know if they're familiar with ballet, but it's completely different in feeling. Mm-hmm. And that's where some of the comedy and some of the interest lies.
What is it about the company that keeps you coming back and really invested in them?
Maybe the product of a deranged mind. it's fun. You know, how many, you know, it's fun. I love ballet because I was trained as a dancer, and I love comedy, and I like drag, and the atmosphere in the company is kind of like a family, and it's fun. And we go all around the world performing to very enthusiastic audiences. It's really quite interesting, you know.
How big is your company, and how much training and rehearsal goes into the pre-production before you hit the road and take the show on the road, so to speak?
Well, the company is 16 members, and it is a full-time, year-round job. We, you know, in American dance, it's considered, you know, paid by the week, and it's not a 52-week contract, because no dance companies are. It's about a 40-week contract, and we are organized in terms of our rehearsals and staging of our ballets, just like any other company. We rehearse. You know, the company is pretty stable in terms of the dancers staying with us. So, for instance, you know, before we go to Chicago, we'll rehearse for exactly 1 week, and then we'll take that show, and we're going to go all around the United States with that show, those ballets. We have about 50 ballets in the repertory, and so we just mix and match them, you know, to create a really good program. Because we haven't been to Chicago, the city itself, in quite a few years. We're bringing, you know, our sort of classic program.
I see. And I just was on your website a little earlier, which is, I believe, trocadero.org, where folks can check them out as a company. But congratulations, you just celebrated like 500 cities around the world. It's just an astounding number.
Usually at the end of every year, I check to see what cities have been new. And every year we have a few new cities, and that's pretty exciting. And if you think about it, even though it's not a gay show per se, because you have to define, in my opinion, a gay show by addressing, you know, gay issues, you know, gays in the military, gay marriage, gay adoption, you know, things like that. There is a lot of gay sensibility in the show, of course, because, you know, most of the people who have come through the company have been gay. So in our own way, we're actually, you know, bringing a type of gay culture all around the globe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I mean, when I joined in 80, which is, you know, a long time ago already, we would go into these theaters in Des Moines, Iowa, and Omaha, and Birmingham, Alabama, pretty much to hostile stage, you know, the people who worked behind the scenes, the stage crew, you know, the guys on the crew side, you know, I mean, generally speaking, be pretty hostile towards us, not knowing who we were or, you know, what we were about. We're just some crazy drag queens from their point of view. But we always conducted ourselves in what I would say is a very professional manner, and now we're pretty much welcomed everywhere. And, you know, if you think about it, in 1974, the Trocadero was playing at midnight shows on 14th Street in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And just 2 years ago, that would, what, be 2005, we were performing at both the Châtelet Theater in Paris and the Bolshoi Theater in Moscow. So that's a really long road to travel.
It is.
An organization.
Well, and even though you say that you're maybe not a gay or queer you know, theatrical experience, obviously you are challenging gender roles, mm-hmm. which, you know, with people, many lay people connect gender and sexuality, exploration mm-hmm. and contradiction and being challenged by both of those topics. You know, many of us in the gay community know those two things are separate, but obviously connected. And so I think that that work that you've done has to have created change. I mean, just to hear yeah. the difference of when you show up and you're professional and then they see your talent and your skills as performers, that you change minds. You change lives that way, like one city, one show at a time with a troupe. Where did the name come from?
I totally 100% agree with that. We have contributed to, acceptance for our community.
Yeah, I totally agree. Where did the name come from?
That's a little bit. The guys who formed the Trocadero way back when probably had no idea, you know, that 34 years later it was still going to be here. And so... It's a little bit cryptic in its description, but basically it's an homage to all the ballet. There, in the early part of the last century, the ballet boom of that century was really started by Diaghilev and his Ballet Russe company. Mm. And after he died in 1929, many people who had been involved with the company tried to form their own kind of Ballet Russe. So there was the Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo, the original mm. Ballet Russe, Le Ballet de Monte Carlo, Le Ballet Russe. So the Trocadero really is paying homage to all of those Ballet Russe companies. That's why we change our names. You know, for instance, Paul Gieselin, who's now our ballet master and our senior ballerina, his stage name is Ida Never Say Never. Yeah, I mean, you know, we take these crazy Russian names, and that's how it was. You know, I grew up in Los Angeles and studied with a woman named Patricia Denise, but actually she was from Canada, but she had to dance under the name of Alexandra Denisova. So, you know, that was the way it was back then. So that's why Trocadero really does pay homage to all those dusty older Russian touring companies.
What are some of your favorite experiences that you've had while dancing?
It's always great when the audience is really savvy and you're in a really, really gorgeous theater. And recently, last year, we performed in this huge brand new theater in Milan. And that was really one of the most sensational performances we ever did. It was when the theater that was built for the Scala opera, ballet and opera to go to when the main theater was being reconstructed wow. in the center of the town. And it was this gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous theater, you know, filled with gold. And the main curtain was this beautiful plush red color. And the audience was just unbelievably gorgeous and ready, coming to have a good time. But if you looked at them in the auditorium, I was saying, oh, my God, we're in for trouble. an audience that is going to be very quiet, but they were sensational, and we get that a lot. Actually, we recently came back from Maison de la Danse in Lyon, and also from Prague and Bologna in Italy, and had really, really, really great audiences. But what has also been kind of exciting lately is that we sometimes get kids in the auditorium, and in Japan, where we go every summer since 1982 now. We're actually going to do a school performance in Nagoya. They're going to bring children from all over the school districts. I don't know how it is in Chicago, but when I was growing up in L.A., you know, they would take all the kids to the Shrine Auditorium, you know,
right.
like 5,000 feet out. So we are now going to do that for the kids of Nagoya, and I think that's pretty sensational.
Everyone, the Trokes will appear one night only at the Harris Theater, Wednesday, January 27th, 2010 at 7:30. That's right. They are coming back this year. Do not miss them because they only come through every few years. And as you have heard throughout this show, it is a show not to be missed. It will be an all new repertoire than what you just heard Tori discuss back in 2007. So if you already saw them, you'll want to see it again. I already have my seats. Tell your friends. And if you'd like tickets, visit HarrisTheaterChicago.org. I hope I see you there. We will all be laughing, gleeful, and you'll hurt. You'll hurt. It's better than sex. Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY. So, Mitchell, it's so good to have you back.
I'm back, and I'm back for a long time now.
Yeah, you're back until maybe Alaska. What are you going to do to fill your time? You've been working so hard.
So hard. Well, I'm actually working. I just don't have to do anything because I'm understudying.
Yeah.
For a show that I've already done. They generously asked me to understudy. And so I'm just going to be getting paid to just not leave town.
Yep.
So that I'm available just in case, which is a joy because it's a theater and a show that I'm very emotionally invested in and couldn't be happier to be part of the team and whatever.
And you could have a showgirl moment where you just run over there and knock somebody down the steps.
Oh, God.
Throw
some
pearls.
It's a show that I did in Louisville, Kentucky,
Looking
Glass Alice that we've talked about. It's such a difficult show that I am ready, willing, and prepared to go on. But the rock star that I'm understudying, Molly Brennan, for the theater goers in Chicago, you know she is. She just played Harpo at the Goodman in Animal Crackers. She's part of 500 Clown. She's a rock star, and she's not going anywhere.
Yep.
I mean, I don't want to jinx her, but the idea of Molly missing a show for any reason is sort of laughable.
Yep.
She's the Ethel Merman of Chicago theater. She never misses a show. And
I have a friend who understudied Ben Vereen on Broadway in Jelly's Last Jam many, many, many years ago. Probably most people don't even know that damn show. But anyhow, he's not even a friend. He's a guy I worked with very early in my career, and he used to tell this great story, you know, because Ben Vereen was very old, and had been in a car wreck or something, or had his hip replaced or something.
Yeah, something going on.
And said, and Ken would always say, Ken was in the original cast of Cats and Starlight Express and a lot of original casts. And but he was understanding as the chimney man in Jelly's Last Jam. And he said, you know, Ben Vereen would be walking backstage, just like kind of hunkered over and like he could barely walk and kind of crippled, almost shuffling, you know, down the hallway and sitting in his room and going up to the side of the stage. And said those stage lights would come on and he would step one foot on that board on stage and he would just be like, pow, bum, 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 pow, and just like dancing his ass off. And then he'd walk off the stage and he'd go back to kind of hunkered over. And
at the risk of
missed a show, I don't think, Ken said.
At the risk of letting the fact that I'm a pretentious son of a bitch leak out, which I am, I think that's what makes performers noble, right? It's like we are the clowns of the world, you know, whether we're sad clowns or happy clowns, whatever. And so what makes us noble is that whole idea of the show must go on. We go on.
Yep.
We go on. If we can, you know, when I was in college, we were told if you can fog a mirror, you go on.
Yep.
And so it's part of what makes us noble. We know that what we do is entertainment and that in the grand scheme of the universe, it's not as important as, you know, running a country or something, but we do provide a service for people to escape and to have entertainment and to think. And so I think that any performer worth their salt understands that you can have a cold, you go on. I mean, when I was doing Looking Glass Alice, On stage, I ripped my finger open pretty badly.
Yep.
I mean, you know, I probably should have gotten stitches, but I didn't because I was trying to be all butch and something. But, I mean, I literally bled through the whole rest of the show.
Yep.
And just, you know.
You just kept going.
I mean, I had literally ripped my finger open.
Yep.
I mean, the fleshy part of my pointer finger. Yep. And you just go on.
Yep.
And so I think Molly will just go on. But it's a brutally difficult, physically difficult show.
Yep.
In a very satisfying way. And so I'm doing that until, but I'm also hopefully working on a couple of projects just for artistic sake, directing my friend Lauren's play that she's written, and then helping another friend directing a cabaret for her.
Cool.
So I'm trying to be creative at the same time. I'm taking advantage of the fact that I'm getting paid to sit around.
I want you to sit around with me some. Let's hang out.
Let's do it. I literally will just be hanging out.
Well, and you know what's going to be coming up is the Big Gays Got Talent competition as well as Windy City Gay Idol. So Mitchell will be hanging around.
Oh my God, let's
us.
Do that.
Let's just do that.
Let's have a blast doing that.
Let's just have some fun in bars with gay people.
With gay
talented,
people.
Talented, fun, singing gay people.
Is there anything better?
Nothing.
You know, I went to my very first... I've been going to New York off and on since I was a kid, right? Because I only grew up 2 hours away, 2-3 hours away. And just this past Sunday, I went to a gay bar in New York for the first time.
Are you kidding? You've never been to a gay bar?
Ever.
I've been to a gay bar in New York.
Whenever I go to New York, I always have so much to do that it's never about like going to gay bars and getting laid. It's like about seeing friends and
museums. You don't have to go to a gay bar and get laid. I know that's all the same.
Have you ever met a gay man?
Okay. You haven't been to a gay bar to get laid.
No,
you just can walk down the street and get laid by anybody in New York. You're so adorable.
Which is another story that happened in New York, but at a cafe.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went to this really divey... We were hanging out at dinner at this fabulous restaurant, and then... one of my friends said, "What do you want to do? Should we go to this like divey gay bar in the village, off Christopher Street?"
You want to give it a name?
It's called Hangers.
Of course it is.
And we went, and it was so fun, and we had such a good time, and it was so deliciously divey, and you know, it's those kind of bars where you're peeing, and somebody shows you their dick, whether you ask them to or not.
And that's why gay men go to bars and get laid.
Well, not all of us and not all the time, but it was one of those, everybody who knows, every gay man knows exactly what I'm talking about, that kind of bar. But it was totally fun. And
I'm so glad you're not a virgin anymore, that you've been to a gay bar in New York.
Can you believe it? But this is also, this isn't even like high. It's not even like,
people go to New York. It's just a baby step. It's just baby steps.
It was totally divey and totally fun and super cheap drinks.
So somebody in New York right now is listening to us, go have a drink at Hangers for Mitchell
super
and
fun.
I. And we hope you get laid.
Also, go to a restaurant bar called Bar Fedora.
Uh-huh.
And say hi to George, the bartender. We went in there one day just to have a quick drink.
Did you sleep with him too?
No, he was like 70 years old. Nothing against the 70-year-olds, but you know, he was
the silver old, fox.
Fabulous older. He wasn't even, no, he dyed his hair. He was this older, he was this older, quirky, eccentric queen who we just loved so much. We could have stayed there all day. We were the only ones in the place. It was pre-dinner, pre-happy hour. It was just like afternoon cocktail, quick. We stayed for maybe half an hour, but George, say hi to George at Bar Fedora.
Say hi to George at Bar Fedora. Mitchell?
Yes.
I'll see you at the Trokes.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'll see you at a gay bar.
Fantastic.
I won't leave with you because you'll probably be getting late.
Yeah, don't show me your dick.
I will not show you my dick.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.